Hi, this is Angele Kijo, and you're listening to People Powered Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. Peace and love.
The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Yeah, everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood, we sing.
On the Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind. Well, welcome once again to the Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. And of course, that's me, Sonia Barrett. And thank you once again for tuning in on this Monday and wishing you the best Monday possible each and every Monday. And as you stroll through the week, you begin to move through the week. Thanks to Donna DeLore for the use of her song, Be the Change. Doesn't matter how many times I hear that song, it just really hits me for just a number of reasons. But anyway, thank you so much, Donna, for allowing me to use this very important, significant, and powerful song. And just a quote here that says, people will generally accept facts as truth only if the facts agree with what they already believe. And I think that's really quite interesting, because the question is, you know, what do they believe? What do you believe? You know, how narrow are those beliefs? How limiting are those beliefs? Are you able to step outside of maybe that narrow box, that small box of beliefs, in order to engage or see and understand something different? And I think that's very important. It's part of how we got here. We arrive at this point as human beings in these human bodies. But today is, again, we're going to be chatting with one of my really favorite guests I've been interviewing. I've had the opportunity to chat with over the years, and it's been a while since we have spoken with him. And that is Peter Moon. And we're going to be talking about his recent trip to India, in reference to the World Genesis Foundation, just find out from him all that he was able to do, all that he discovered, his experiences. And of course, Peter Moon is the author and investigator of space-time projects, best known for co-authoring the book, The Montauk Project, and a whole series of books. So we've discussed many of those books over the years on this show. Including the Roswell deception and the demystification of World War II, which I think might have been one of the last interviews that we did. All right, so a quick short bio, not going to read a lot, but Peter, yes, he was born here in California. He doesn't live here anymore. He's, and again, I said what he's primarily known for with the space-time projects, and these concerned projects in the past, present, and future that control both time and perception of time. This began in 1990 when Peter met scientist Preston Nichols, one of the world's foremost experts in the world on electromagnetic phenomena and who had been involved in strain experiments at the Montauk Air Force Station on Long Island, which included the manipulation of time. Their collaboration in writing the Montauk Project experiment in time and its subsequent sequels have now reached legendary proportions. Of course, Preston passed in October of 2018. So we could go on and on, but let me mention this, that Peter had released a series of videos, Time Travel Theory Explained. And so when we talk with him, we will also share with you once again, maybe how to explore that information. And I do believe it's Time Travel Information Center.com. So Peter,
Education Center, Time Travel.
Education Center, Time Travel Education Center.com. And it will be on the website as well. So welcome, Peter. So good to hear your voice.
Well, it's nice to be back with you, Sonia. Thank you.
Yes, it's been many years here. It feels like it's been many years. It's probably not, but it's been a little while. All right. So, Peter, you recently went to India. I don't know where we want to begin, because initially you were going there in reference to the World Genesis Foundation, which it was originally, obviously, Dr. David Anderson founded. So can you sort of lead off there in terms of your original reason for going, if that's appropriate?
Certainly. We go back to, you did an interview many, many years ago, like 15 years ago or so, with David Anderson.
And I sure did.
And I don't know if in that interview he mentioned India as being the leading country in terms of time control research. And time control is essentially slowing down or speeding up time, which facilitates actual time travel, which he has stated he can now accomplish since 2010. So anyway, did he talk about India in that particular
Interview? Gosh, to be honest with you, I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine. Well, he talked about it in an interview with me, which is available to paid subscribers on my website in Time Travel Education Center. There's a free membership and then there's a paid membership. And he said that the Indian government was not restrictive of this technology, because he said India was unique in that their politicians are scientists. India is a very highly educated country. Out of every seven people in the world is of East Indian extraction, or directly from the country by one generation, perhaps two, perhaps more if you go into countries like Guyana, or where Indians have settled in South Africa and South America. But so it's a very important country, and also because their language of Hindi is just generally not known to the outside world, so they can keep everything within their own security paradigm. So India is very advanced in that technology. And of course, I was very interested, because when he released a patent application that was made in 2009, he released this in about soon thereafter. I don't remember when he released it, maybe a few years after. But that patent application was sent to me and a handful of others from India. And there was a secretary or somebody of that ilk who sent it to me. And I had a few correspondences with her. So India was very much on his horizon at that time. He spent a long time working there. And he said that, he says, oh, I'd like you to meet the guys from the lab. They have some pretty interesting things. You could have some pretty interesting conversations with them. And I said, well, I'd rather see the lab, you know. And so maybe that could be arranged. But he had a falling out with them. It not with necessarily those people at the lab, but the people who were running it. And I don't know the extent of that falling out where he became disinterested, because he was not happy that they were sending drones into time. He thought, every time you change the timeline, you change it irreversibly. And he didn't like the idea. I'm sure there's more involved than that, but I have
that's not, interesting.
Yeah, I've not really heard anything since, and that goes back, a long time ago. And he left a long time ago.
That's very interesting, Peter. I mean, I'm not mean to cut you, but because we are not, your average person is not really exposed to this, the science or the idea of any of this, but it really brings to mind the idea of the fact that, okay, they were sending drones into time, and he was saying the disruption of the timeline, is that's what you said, correct?
Yeah, and also it's like you really don't know what happens. It's not like
there's nothing fixed. You don't know.
Yeah, and the last time I saw him in person was 15 years ago, when he showed us a video of an early version of the time reactor, which was it made a amaryllis plant grow in 3 minutes, which would normally take 3 or 4 days, and that was shown to about 20 of us at Montauk, at a seminar I was conducting there with the medicine man who just passed away in March. So anyway, that was, the bigger his developments were, the more reclusive he has become, because it becomes a much more sensitive, issue apparently. Now,
which makes sense.
It does make sense. So, that is. So of course, I was very interested in where he said these facilities were in the Dighi Hills, D-I-G-H-I, in the Pune, P-U-N-E, area of India.
Mumbai, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a couple hours south of Mumbai, southwest mm-hmm. of Mumbai. And I had always been interested there. So how what had happened is David founded the World Genesis Foundation right after he got back from Romania. We sat in my driveway. He was talking about it after he took me out to lunch in our first meeting together. And as the years would roll on, 10 years later, he appoints me to become, or proposes me to become, a honorary board member. And the chairman says, no, let's make him a permanent board member. So that was done. And David then backed off of the board membership. He's no longer on the board. His wife, Heather, is now the president. And basically the World Genesis Foundation is an organization he set up initially to help Romanian artists, writers, and scientists. But its mission now, it's affiliated with UNESCO, United Nations Educational, forget the other designations of UNESCO, but it's to give, leave no child without hope for the future. So it's very much interested in education. Now, what I do in the World Genesis Foundation is I attend board meetings on Zoom, once every other month or so, and we discuss what the foundation's doing. And one of the main activities has been the camp in Romania that I've attended most years. including the last two or 3 years, last 3 years. I will not be attending this year.
You're speaking of the conference that I spoke at, but via remote. Is that the same one
we're
talking about?
I don't know if you spoke there because I'm okay. often not present
okay.
going on in the island. And so it probably is if you spoke by remote. Atlanticron, it's called.
Exactly. No, I did. It was several years ago.
Yeah, it's very exciting, a lot of fun, a lot of education takes place there. It's quite remarkable on the island in the Danube in southeast Romania. It's like a 45-minute drive from to the Black Sea from there. But basically what I do in the foundation is I, you know, go to the camp, attend there, lecture there, teach Qigong. And I also do that coincidentally with my own investigations, which have been centered around Choclobina Cave in Transylvania, which is an area that David has said is the most important with regards to time travel phenomena. And that's a whole other side story, which I've set up a ham radio station there with the help of donors and very capable person who helped me, who volunteered and helped to set up the ham radio station. And it's my hope to get David up there someday and show him things about the cave and learn things about the cave, because to my knowledge, he's never been there, at least in this reference frame that we know. So my interest and then also in November, Heather, his wife, the president, had said, we've all been invited to India, because they had some connections in India that the Indian people have Skyped in and participated. And it was a outreach in connectivity and connection, because most of the centers or the foundation's work has been done in Romania. There's been some UNESCO groups that take place in Maryland every summer with programs for young children and also, or not so young children, maybe high school age, maybe even college, but also in Nigeria. So that's been fairly limited there, but this was an outreach to India. So we were all invited to go, and I asked for more information. I never got it. And then about March, we had another board meeting and she re-invited us. And I said, well, give me the information. And I had an astrologer and a psychic reader both indicated I should go on this trip very strongly. So I did. And it wasn't too late. I was able to make arrangements. And I flew over there, leaving on the 15th of April, arriving on the 16th, and where we were being hosted by Vidushi Daga and her husband and family, who have what's called a bungalow, which is at least a four-story building where they have an office, a home, big family, servants, education. They have an education program. I can't explain all the things they do. One of the things they do, provide education for children through books and through other activities that they do. But when I got there, we were taken to a school. We were fed, taken to a school, very well taken care of by her. And we get to a school and they're putting Raja hats on us and, you know, these stoles that you put around royalty or something, and throwing flowers of petals and playing drums. It's like very overwhelming. Like what on earth is this? We were flabbergasted. And they explained to us that they treat their guests as divinities. And they danced, they performed. It was quite extensive. They also, you know, took us in and fed us. They also had an Ayurvedic doctor do our pulse of all of us and give us a diagnosis and some medicine. You know, he said I needed to sleep. He also, from the pulse, could pick up that I had cervical injuries from an accident that was 2 years ago. So it was, we were very well treated. And then this would go on to another school. And then we'd tour the school and we'd sit in with the principals and the teachers. And what their motivation in doing this was to get accredited as with UNESCO recognition. And we're not UNESCO, but Heather is now the representative for UNESCO, UNESCO Clubs in America, president of UNESCO Clubs in America. So between the World Genesis Foundation, UNESCO, and which the head of UNESCO, Guy Jochen, who's been to Atlanticron twice and who I know, they could provide certification for these principals and organizations with our Indian sponsor, which is a group of educators. And it will, you know, there will be a certain courses they will take to get their accreditation. And this will provide a source of donations for World Genesis Foundation, which we really don't get a lot of donations. We get some, but, you know, all of the board members, we spend our own money when we go places. We don't take from the foundation. That's not what it's there for. So that's what we were doing. And what did I do there? I would sometimes be introduced as a physics expert or a physics person, which I had corrected them when I had the opportunity. My specialty is in one area of physics, which is time travel. I'm not a physicist, but I understand time travel much better than most physicists. And this is a very key thing. And this is why the Time Travel Education Center is important. Because it explains that time travel, mathematically and scientifically, is within the bounds of ordinary mathematics and physics. People make it very complicated. They don't understand it, and they can't do it. Now, while I can't do it, I have a friend who can. Now, that's sort of like where we reach the horizon. And what was very special on this trip was that we were in a big auditorium, and I remember they not only did the dancing, but they were doing acrobatics where these two guys would come at each other and just somersault and miss each other's head by a few inches. I said, God, I wouldn't want to do that. But anyway, Heather gets up and is talking about dreams and passion. She's a teacher herself. She's very good with children, with kids, with anybody. And she was talking about dreams and passion, asking people for their dreams and passion. And then she comes over to me and she says, Peter, what's your passion? So I just happened to have one of my Montauk Project books in my hand because I was giving them out to principals and whatnot, certain people. And I said, well, this is my passion. I explained how I wrote this book about time travel, about how it's takes place in their general vicinity. And it was quite a shock for me to even be, you know, she asked me my dream and my passion. She didn't ask me, what did I do in Romania or anything like that, or any as mundane questions. I had to say what I did. And all of this sort of let the cat out of the bag as far as what I was doing there. And as a result of this trip, we have scheduled for me to see David for the first time in 15 years in the summer. I don't know what date. That's contingent upon a few things. And the reason I'm going, other than I've thought of visiting him for Christmas a couple times, but it didn't work out for various reasons. But I'm going to help him with a personal matter, a private matter, which will remain undisclosed. And my intention is to help him, of course, because I feel that I can do it. I have some special knowledge about this area he needs to solve, which will also facilitate him traveling to Romania again. And I would like to get him to the cave in Transylvania and to show him, you know, I can get access to the cave because it's blocked off, because I know how the connections to do that. I mean, I've been working on that cave project since he told me about it in 2015. It's 10 years I've been working on that, 12 years since I initially, or 11 years since I initially went to the cave. And one of the most intriguing aspects about the cave is that one of his friends, who's also my friend, who happens to be the preeminent Freemason in Romania, said, when I told him about this cave, he went there twice. He took his students, about 40 students, and he said, oh, this is very dangerous. This goes back about 3 or 4 kilometers. It's very dangerous. And you should be very careful. And okay. So it took me till 2022 when I took Heather with me. It's the first time I've ever gotten her up into, you know, the heart of Transylvania. And when we went in, we had to get let in because they've got it all gated off through a biologist. And the biologist let us in, and I said, by the way, do you have any white bats in this cave? She says, several. So that white bat is, of course, a book I wrote, The White Bat, The Alchemy of Writing, which, you know, sort of was a vision I had in 1989 of being in Transylvania and Dracula turning into a white bat. So my dream in 1989 was 20 years ahead of me actually getting to Transylvania. I never knew I would ever go there, never had any particular desire to go there. But the dream worked, time works through dreams, dreams work through time. So basically, the biologist, you know, lets us in, we get in, and it was anticlimactic. I said, this isn't dangerous at all. He goes, oh, piece of cake, he says in English, piece of cake. And it was. Now, there's a few areas you have to be a little careful, but it didn't match up to what my friend had said was so dangerous. We collected what we thought were some minerals, or what I thought were minerals, hydroxylalestidite, which is evidence of a time reactor discharge. I believe it's hydroxylalestidite. I gave it to Heather, asked her, she hopes to have it analyzed. It's been years, but it hasn't happened yet. But so anyway, last year with my Freemason friend, we talked about it. He took us out to this, you know, Heather and myself and some more friends, this beautiful dinner in Bucharest. It was a wonderful, wonderful dinner. And he had said previously to me that if David comes, he says he will take me to the cave. He will come with us to the cave and he will show us 7 gates of initiation, 7 gates. And he makes it sound so mysterious. And I've seen, you know, and I told him this just doesn't match up with what I saw. Just doesn't match up. But I said, I'm willing to have a look. And he's being very mysterious about it. And then I talked to his secretary, and I've known his secretary for 15 years, at least. And I've always made a point. I made a point of being friends with her because I said, you know, if I can't get through to him, if I'm trying to contact him, I can get through to her. And I said, and she agreed that she said the people that went on the trip scared the daylights out of them and they're afraid to go back. So it appears to me that we went into a regular cave. They went into the same cave, but it was a different cave. Now,
interesting. Well, Peter, can you stick a pin in that simply because we need to go to a quick station break? And then when we come back, you can pick up from there. So please stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back after this brief break.
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car. But you don't need a car to get around LA. And we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle. Leaf blowers, not a vehicle. Call 877-KPFK-AUTO. Donate your car to KPFK. Help the station. And commute by bike. There's no traffic on a bike.
And we are back. We are coming to you from KPFK 90.7 FM in Southern California and streaming live at kpfk.org. You are listening to The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett and our guest, Peter Moon. And we are chatting it up regarding his recent trip to India, which was intended to open up new connections to the World Genesis Foundation, which he has been explaining. And now we're talking a bit about Romania and the cave. And you mentioned Seven Gates of Initiation. So, Peter, pick up where you left off, please.
Well, yes, it's my hope that by all these machinations that I've been working on for 10 years, diligently, I mean, you know, I set up a ham radio station that started in 2018 when I went into what was known as the wet cave, which I went at least a mile deep into the wet cave, which is quite an exploration with, you know, full spelunking gear and whatnot. And I got a message to put up a radio station from there. And then that took me, that was 2019. And so then COVID happened. I raised money for it, but it took years. There were all sorts of problems with the people that came along that were supposed to help. And finally, this incredible man, Cyprian, came by. Heather found him on the internet. He was great, great guy, set it all up. And now we've got a ham radio station there, which, of course, David and Heather are very active in ham radio, and they teach it at Atlanticron. David teaches it remotely. Heather's live there. And of course, I was like feeding this idea when she hadn't gone. She was absent for a year or two, and I was still promoting the ham radio idea and participating in what the kids were doing. And I said, oh, we should set up a ham radio station there. So that I got the money almost right away in 2019, but then COVID happened. So I was not able to return to the cave until 2022 when I took Heather with me. I went back in 23, but it wasn't until 24 last summer that I was able to get the radio installed. And that was 5 years. Hmm. Now, in Qigong, which I practice, slow is better. So I've been working on that a long time. I've been exploring the cave. I mean, it took me years to get into the wet cave. And then it took me 3 more years to get into the dry cave.
And what do the caves just represent in terms of you know, what we're talking about with time travel and so on, just so the audience has a sense of.
I will explain that mm-hmm. when I interviewed David in 2015. I said, what can you tell me about Romania? He says, I'll get back to you. And first when he told me, he said, this is, don't talk about it. It's confidential. But then when I interviewed him, he talked about it on the broadcast. So it became unconfidential. And he told me, I can tell you about Chocolavina Cave. And he says, there is a evidence of a time reactor having discharged there 200 or 2000 years ago. And we know that time by reason of the examination of the sediment. Extensive research has been done on this by geologists. It's even on the internet. And he said that that element, hydroxylelestadite, could only be created by the discharge of a time reactor. high heat, because when a time reactor is in use, it manifests hydroxylelestadiene. It's a rare thing. It doesn't appear everywhere. And he says the only way those things could be created in a cave, that element could be created in a cave, or molecule, whatever it is with the high heat to charge discharge equivalent to a time reactor. Now, he also stated later in 2017 that not all the information on Chocolabina Cave has been released. He was very shocked and surprised to know that I had been there prior to him telling me this. And the reason I was brought there was by an archaeologist who took me one day and with my friends and took us to the cave. And okay, he showed us the cave. It was interesting. There's a lot of photographs of blue orbs and whatnot. And that was that. I didn't attach any special significance until the following spring when he told me about it. So he was very moved by the fact that I'd been there. And this is right in the area where Radu Sinemar talks about huge deposits of gold with golden tunnels that lead into the inner earth, which becomes a very phantasmagorical story. Nevertheless, there are huge gold deposits there. Whether the tunnels are there exactly as he describes remains to be seen, or whether, you know, there's parallel or layered realities that he's picking up on. Nevertheless, this is a very highly charged area. Now, what I found out last year, well, I had dreams of like a golden rod, like in the Indiana Jones story when he's holding up the staff of Ra and the light comes through. I had a dream that I was doing that. And when I came downstairs, came outside that morning after the dream, the owner of the camp, Germán, said, was telling me about the Oriflame and how these flames come up out of the ground in front of the cave. And he's talking about the wet cave. So I went down that night to meet Mr. Belusha, and his son-in-law had seen these, and his wife had seen these on many different occasions. And they said they only occur on holy days like Easter or Christmas or New Year's. But then I found out they occur elsewhere in the valley. And I met some kids last summer who encountered it in the entrance to the drive cave. The drive cave is a man-made entrance because it was used to extract guano, bat guano, for explosives and fertilizers. So there's a long man-made cave. It used to be open, but now they've shut that off. And then when you get to the end of the cave, there's a steel door. And the biologist had to open both doors for us to get us in there. But nevertheless, these two kids had snuck over the cave and said they saw the Oriflames within that entrance. So what I learned is there's a lot of phenomena around there that is abnormal. So, you know, this is all
abnormal and what, unexplainable?
Yes. And yes, yes. I mean, one guy gave me a detailed explanation of how it emanates where treasure is buried. That's been a consistent theme story. But to get back to India in the remaining time. So India was putting, of course, has put together a tangible agenda to meet with him again. Now, I don't know if he's going to tell me anything about time, although in 2017, which is 8 years ago, I asked him, you know, that he indicated I might be able to see the lab someday. I said, when do you think that might be? He says, I think that time is very soon. Of course, that's 8 years ago. And because things take a long time in Qigong, I said, okay, that's fine. We're in no hurry. So India, the astrologer told me I'd have very profound revelations. And I have to say, going to India and being surrounded by Hindu people, almost everybody was Hindu. You see a few Sikhs and a few perhaps other people. I only saw five people there that might have been American. And I say might have been American because they could have been Australian, English, German. They look like they could have been American. I just don't know that they were. Didn't see many white people. Saw a few, but not many. And so was less than what you call minority. And they are very, you see the divinity within these people, within the Hindus. It's a divinity I do not see within Christians, because I just don't see it. It's not that they, everybody has the divinity within them, but it's like expressed and aware. And they honor and respect your soul in a way that people in America typically do not do.
It is very different. It's very different. And incidentally, Peter, so funny too, last week, Sunday, so wild. I was going hiking as I normally do, but I was so drawn to go to this temple that just to go there, which I thought was a Buddhist temple. I'd been there before, but I couldn't remember what it was. And when I got out the car, you know, take my shoes off and look, and it was a Hindu temple. So it was interesting that you were saying that. But anyway, go ahead.
I went into my first Hindu temple, yes. I went to you know, several Hindu temples. And it has a profound effect on me. And at the end, my last visit was to the temple of Ganesha, which is the elephant-headed god, son of Shiva. And this temple is pure silver and gold. And it's in the Pune. Again, that's P-U-N-E. And you go there. And they don't want you taking pictures of it, but I did get a bit of a picture from, you know, the outer corridor. And you go in and my Indian friends were given coconuts. They wouldn't give me a coconut because, you know, to take home with them, because I'm traveling overseas and I can't take a coconut with me. So they gave me, you call it a sash or a stole. It's like a golden banner you wear over your shoulders. And what this is symbolic of is this temple is where all your wishes will be granted by Ganesha. He's a god of abundance and wealth, and more than that. And I also, from the kids, I was cajoled into going to this art gallery that's done by the kids, and we were cajoled into buying paintings. So I bought one. It's small, so I could put it in my suitcase. It's beautiful. It's a baby Ganesha. It's adorable. Everybody loves it. I have it hanging on my fireplace right now. And every time I look at it, it reminds me that all my wishes will come true. And I wasn't making a lot of wishes. I was wishing just in general. I wasn't making selfish wishes. I said, okay, good. Things will go my way. And but the profound realization, because I'm connecting with indigenous energies. Just like when I wrote about the Moors, I was able to connect with indigenous Moors. And with Montauk, I connected with the indigenous Montauk pharaohs. And now I'm in India and I'm connecting with the indigenous energies. And this, and what you find out in India is, you know, Hinduism accepts all divinities. It says, yeah, okay, Buddha. Buddha was a Hindu. He knew the Hindu gods, and he is an expression of the divinity. And now that gets into, you know, pissing wars when it gets into politics and stuff. But I could elaborate on this, but basically, there are three versions of Buddhism, probably many more, but the main ones is, you know, Hinayana Buddhism is like, he's just a person, we follow his rules, he's a good rule maker, to oversimplify it. And Mahayana Buddhism, which is a more transcendental spiritual aspect of the Buddha. And then there's the Tantric Buddhism, Vajrayana Buddhism, which in both that, which and the Mahayana Buddhism, is that the Buddha received a deity. He outdid himself. He connected with the divine mind, which is the Qigong concept, and he connected with the Kala Chakra deity, where he downloaded all this information of the Kala Chakra, which means wheel of time, and that he taught it to Tibetans, Tibetan kings. I'm not going to be able to elaborate on this because of time constraints, but what's important, the Kala Chakra is the wheel of suffering. And we're all attached to the wheel of suffering. And the whole key of Hinduism and Buddhism is to detach from it and reach Nibbana or Nirvana. Now, this is somewhat akin to the Christian concept of heaven and relieving yourself from, you know, the suffering of life, from sin, whatever you want. It's the connectivity. Now, there's a scholar on Buddhism, Robert Thumann, who talks about the Kala Chakra as a time machine, but he says it's not like an H.G. Wells time machine. It's a time machine whereby when a Buddha, one attains Buddhahood and becomes compassionate, they travel in time to dissipate suffering. So it's like a constant operation. You got to reach across all of time to dissipate suffering. Now, what was interesting to me is I went to certain caves in the Pune region, and maybe I could connect these to the inner earth themes of Radu Sinemar. But one of the things about Radu Sinemar's work, it's straight out of Tibetan Buddhism or Buddhism in general, when we're talking about the esoteric Buddhism, because it's so the concept in the Kala Chakra is that there are these beings who have attained Buddhahood. They're outside of this realm. And part of the inner earth stuff Radu talks about, the prize there is Shambhala. And Shambhala is a place where you live free from suffering. It's paradisical. But it's really not a physical location. It's something you have to create in your own space.
It's an attainment in a certain sense.
It manifests.
Yeah. I'm a Vipassana practitioner. I'm not sure how familiar with Vipassana, but I remember. But when you're talking about suffering, they refer to misery, to getting rid of. You want to evolve from misery, which is what anchors humans to their suffrage.
Right, and you want to have, you know, paradise in your own environment. And where paradise exists for me in your neighborhood is a place called Ferndale. If you've ever been to Ferndale, there's a hiking trail that goes up to the observatory there. I encourage you to take it if you haven't. Ferndale, you can eat at the trail cafe. My father used to take me to Ferndale. That's why it's so special to me. And my daughter and I go there every chance we get when I'm in L.A. Maybe you can come with us.
I'll have to check it out.
Ferndale, and D-E-L-L, Fern, and it's in the Los Feliz area, not too far from the Manly P. Hall, the Philosophical Research.
The Theosophical, because I've been there.
Not Theosophical, Philosophical Research, whatever it's called.
It's old library.
But to me, you know, that's, it's L.A. becomes Shambhala when I'm with my daughter there, because we're so much fun together, and it's my hometown. But yes, it's a matter of, you know, I'm going to, may take me a year or more to do it, but I'm going to create a Shambhala room in my house.
That'll be nice,
because that will remind me that, okay, it's here. And I realized, well, I don't need to go into my own personal life because that's not so important, but you have to create it. And what's very interesting for me in my journey is David Anderson's approach to time is scientific. He has met with Buddhists. He has talked to Buddhists. He might be much more spiritually adept than he lets on, although he doesn't claim to be very adept there, but I think he might be more than he lets on. But the point of it is when you just want to have paradise in your regular life and connect it. Why I have a time travel scientist in my life with the prospect, if not the promise, of having some interaction with this phenomena in a grounded manner. I mean, you know, anybody can flip out and have a time travel experience, imagined or not, but unless you can ground it and tangentialize it through this world, it doesn't have a lot of meaning in this world. And because I'm living in the, and so anyway, these beings that exist in this region are there compassionate, trying to help. And these beings are evocative of what Radu Sinemar writes about. In other words, they're there, but it's a question of connecting to them. And that's the whole, you know, aha realization, which I've written about in the newsletter, which you will read when you read it. And, you know, it will summarize this for you, and it will make more, the newsletter, perhaps it's good you didn't read the newsletter yet, because it'll make more sense to you now after talking to me. And that's the journey. So this is where I leave off in the journey with the newsletter. And by the way, the newsletter's available to subscribers, paid subscribers of the Time Travel Education Center, or you can subscribe directly at skybooksusa.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter. It's $19 a month if you're in the United States, $29 if you're outside the United States, or if you're outside the United States, you can do an e-subscription for the $19.
Or not. Absolutely worth it. I just want to say that, Peter. Absolutely worth it. I think for people who are curious, for people who want to really step outside of what we define as the norm, maybe the people around you aren't necessarily that open. And I think it's that point where you have to see what it is that you want to explore and not wait for other people to be on board. That's what I've learned. At least I've operated that way my whole life. I don't care what the crowd is doing. It's about my own inner curiosity.
Well, also, and it's very important on this subject, is this is, and I write about in the newsletter, this is, people are, have a anathema to this subject, because they you know, you can explain it to them and they'll walk mm-hmm. walk away. And it reminds mm-hmm. me of a story I read of the Buddha when he had his enlightenment of the Bodhi tree. Is this incredible enlightenment? He walks off with the first person he meets. He tells the person of this wonderful enlightenment. They go, "Oh, how wonderful, wonderful." And they just turn around and walk the other way.
Absolutely. That's, like, that's exactly
okay. Oh, that's wonderful. Good. I'm not going to listen to you anymore. Right. And this is it, polarizing. So what happens is, I mean, I've gotten all sorts of people interested in this stuff, and then they turn an about face on it. It's a psychological thing. And the reason for it is, it would completely unmock or discreate the life you have if you could actually time travel.
Like, absolutely.
Really important to us that we go to dinner at 6 o'clock, or that if we miss dinner, we can say we should have eaten at 6 o'clock and I'll have to have a late night snack instead. It's, you know, the consistency. It's very important that we wake up in the morning and see the bushes outside. And even, you know, if our mortgage is overdue and we're about to be evicted and we're wishing for a new life and it looks like everything's against us, it would be a lot more against us if we didn't have those people walking around and being there. It would be more discomforting, you know, to not even have a life that we can dig ourselves out of. Because right. then we, so basically, you know, people have subscribed to time. They've subscribed to life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Agreement. And it's something in my experience and what I've studied from Qigong and Taoism, you have to honor and respect life that's been given to you. And to the degree that you do that, you will be given more life.
Absolutely, because so, things are unlocked for you. You know, the more open you are, is the more access you are allowing yourself to engage in. And I mean, definitely, because that's been my experience for my life. So I completely agree.
Yeah. So this is, you know, the big adventure that I'm on. And, you know,
we have two and a half minutes left, Peter. So I want to make sure you gave out the website address, but if there's anything else that you want to specifically express
about. Come September, hopefully I'll have a whole new perspective on this. And you can find my books, skybooksusa.com, on the internet, also available at Amazon. I suggest people start with the Montauk Project Experiments in Time, the Silver Anniversary Edition, which gives a, 25 years perspective on the original book and the original investigations. And then there is the Transylvania Sunrise, I would start with if you're interested in the Romanian adventures. So thank you, Sonia. It's been a pleasure to be with you again.
Oh, thank you so much. And I want to say to my audience, you know, it was, I bought the Montauk Project. I bought that book many years ago as a birthday gift to my son, to my oldest son, who's like me. So my children are, so they're very much into all of this. And that was really how I really connected with Peter, because he was so excited about what he was reading. So thank you so much for that, Peter. And if you come to LA, please let me know, because I will love to go hiking with you there. All right. So thank you so much to our guest, Peter Moon, and thanks to the listening audience, and also to the board operator. And do visit theexpansionzone.com if you would like to listen to the archive or for any additional information. And to find out more about me and my work, do visit therealsoniabarrett.com. Also, neuroradical, neuroradical.com. And as always, I'd like to remind you to live life to its fullest and question everything. Until next time, see you then.
Hey, Have you joined KPFK's Sustainer Circle yet? It's the best and easiest way to support the broadcast on KPFK, heard Mondays right here at 3 p.m. and 5 days a week via the KPFK archives. Please go to kpfk.org, click donate, and become a Sustainer Circle member today. Pledge any amount you like and help me